Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of April 29th. I'm John Gibson, and it's the last show of the Heisei era. With me is Jim Allen on a Sunday night. How's it going, man? You feeling any different?
I'm in the neighborhood. I'm in the area. Or the era.
The new era.
Whatever.
Well, I liked your comment from last week. That was funny. And it doesn't feel any different for me either.
I know. I'm just like, I'm at the office. I just need a shovel to go through all the copy we get about the last of this and the first of that and the next of this. And I'm going like, man, and Dan from the Japan Times is sending me tweets about this guy's being the last goal of the Heisei. And I said, man, I said, Dan, you're about this close to being muted.
I saw that tweet. And I'm like, we're all going to be muted because it's all going to start over, whatever has to start over. So we're all going to be muted.
Well, the funny thing was that when they had the era name announcement, the day of they announced it would be called the Reiwa era.
Mm-hmm.
They should have done like the doo-wop era, but that's just me. I guess that we already had that one.
Long ago.
Indeed, the bebop era. So anyway, the day they were going to make the announcement, we were told basically no sports stories unless they're really big because everyone's going to be busy doing their era stories.
And all right,
I said,
then.
Fine with me. So maybe Tuesday will be the 30th, and then so we'll have a flood of stories about the last whatever, and then the first will be the first day of the Reiwa era, so they'll be busy covering all of that stuff. So basically, Tuesday and Wednesday sounds like a walk in the park on the sports desk.
Well, sports will have to take a back seat, if a seat at all. Keep on walking,
indeed,
buddy.
Indeed, yeah. I know. Yeah, I'd be right in the back of the bus, which is fine with me.
Yeah, it'll mean that we're not so busy. But anyway, on this week's show, let's get busy with that. We've got a great interview with mm-hmm. Andrew Albers of the Oryx Buffaloes. We're going to look at the Buffaloes and talk about the PL and the CL and try to guess the first group of top players of the month and a little bit more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, well, about a week ago, I went out to MetLife Dome outside Tokyo, and the Oryx Buffaloes were there playing the Cebu Lions, and I finally got a chance to talk to Andrew Albers. And because, we just missed, we had a lot of near misses last year, and he had a really good record. He was 9-2 in 19 games. And it's funny because he and Taylor Youngman of the Giants were very similar in their debuts. They were both really good when they pitched,
mm-hmm.
and then they got hurt.
Right.
So although that's pretty much where the similarity starts. Youngman's a right-hander, and Albers is a left-hander. Albers is a 33-year-old southpaw from Saskatchewan, which is, I think, not any kind of name for a garage bound. he's had two stints with the Minnesota Twins. In between them, he played for the Hanwha Eagles in KBO and the Toronto Blue Jays, and then he finished with the Seattle Mariners in 2017 before he came to Japan. Now, as I said, he was 9-2 last year in 19 games, and basically nothing. He's a very unspectacular pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have any. I don't think he had a game score in any of his starts over about 75 or even 80. He didn't strike out a ton of guys, but he didn't walk anybody.
Right.
He struck out about four times as many batters as he walked, which is, if you're not going to walk it, if you're not going to strike out a lot of guys, that's really what you need to do. So that was, I was curious to see what was going on. And as we talked, I got the feeling this guy's got he sounds like, most guys you talk to them, they say, so, what pitches do you throw? It's, I throw a four-seam and a slider,
right,
and a cutter or a curveball or a change or something. It's usually one, two, three, four at maximum. And he's going, he's bringing out this arsenal. I'm going, this guy was like, he was born to pitch in Japan. So, you know, I was waiting for him to say, oh, and then there's this and then there's that. But he said, no, just those five.
Just those five, yeah. Cut it off. That's the cutoff point, right? Well, he's a left-hander, yeah, man. That's what they do with the, you know, that's why they get the label crafty. They're using everything.
And he did pitch for the Mariners, where they have crafty lefties. So, yeah. So, anyway, let's hear what Mr. Albers had to say to, the usual run-of-the-mill questions that Jim asks.
Okay, our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast, and a long time coming, is Andrew Albers of the Oryx Buffaloes. Thank you for waiting so long to join us.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jim. It's good to be here.
Yeah, it's a good it's a big pleasure, because John and I, we were at the park a few times hoping to talk to you, and that was your day off, or you weren't traveling with the team, or something was going on, and I know no time today. So it's finally to get a chance to talk to you. So first of all, you had a really good year the first year. Tell us a little bit about what went right, and maybe what maybe you were thinking, I can do better this year.
I think the big thing is got off to a good start. And, you know, when you get off to a good start, it makes you feel like you belong, and it makes you feel like it gives you some confidence going through that you can pitch in this league. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to have a few good starts right off the bat, and the team was great behind me. You know, we played great defense, we scored some runs, so I got a few wins, and you know, that really helped the confidence. And so getting off to that kind of start was huge. You know, it boosts your confidence, makes you feel good going forward, and the first half was amazing last year. You know, I unfortunately tailed off a little bit in the second half and then got hurt, but not quite the way you want to end the season. But at the same time, you know, it was a good year, good first year. I'm happy to be back and looking forward to this year.
Okay, now you were talking about before the injury, you were getting back, you were making some adjustments. So what kind of adjustments were you making, physical adjustments or approach adjustments?
And not so much physical. I mean, it was mostly just approach because, you know, obviously coming here the first year, nobody's seen you. Right. You can really stick to your strengths. And then, you know, you start facing teams 3, 4, 5 times, 6 times, back-to-back weeks, all those things. You know, there's no more fooling anyone. They know what you're going to do. So that's kind of when that cat and mouse game really starts of, all right, now I've got to find another way to get you out. I can't always go to my go-to because that's what you're looking for. And so that's kind of one adjustment that I had to make throughout the year was, you know, being ready to do that sooner. And, you know, I think that's something hopefully this year I'm a little bit better prepared for and hopefully can make that adjustment a little sooner.
Okay, now you got to work with Kenya Wakatsuki a lot. He's just sort of finding his room here in NPB, and you're finding your room at NPB now. This is his, his third year as the regular. And now how is that relationship developing?
Well, he's been great. You know, he's a big part of my success. He calls a great game back there, does a great job defensively, you know, does a great job framing pitches. He can throw guys out. Feel really comfortable throwing to him. For me, actually, I think I've had one start, including spring training, that hasn't been with him. So, you know, we've gotten really comfortable together, and he knows what I like to throw, and that just keeps you in rhythm. And again, he does a great job back there calling that game, keeping me calm, keeping me in rhythm, and that certainly helps a lot.
Okay, part of the dynamic here is a little different in the relationship between the pitcher and the catcher, because they expect the catcher pretty much to be the master and commander, and the pitcher, the Japanese pitchers, most of them are a little reluctant to shake off the sign, especially knowing it's coming from the dugout.
I mean, when it comes from the dugout, those ones you don't shake, but certainly, especially early, you know, it was an adjustment period. Obviously, when the catcher doesn't know you as a pitcher and has never caught you before, there's going to be a little bit of an adjustment period where he's trying to figure out what you like to throw and what you like to do and things like that. Certainly, I think the relationship's gotten better that way as he's become more familiar with me. And again, that really helps keep you in rhythm. I'm not a guy that's afraid to shake. You know, I will shake if I'm feeling something a certain way. I'm going to shake to it because I have the baseball in my hand, and he might call the right pitch, but if I don't feel comfortable throwing that pitch, it doesn't matter. And I can throw the wrong pitch, but if I execute, I still have a good chance of getting that guy out. So that's kind of what it comes down to for me is, what am I confident in? And unfortunately, he can't always be in my head knowing exactly what I feel like throwing. So.
Yeah, that's I hear what you're saying. Now let's talk about your pitches at all and what are you comfortable throwing. Pretty much, what was your repertoire coming in? What was your plan? Has it changed any?
The repertoire, it's a two-seam and four-seam, a changeup, a slider, and a curveball, and it, you know, it's nothing outstanding. I have to locate in order to have success. I've got to work in and out, and I've got to get ahead in the count. You know, it's no secret. That's kind of the recipe for success. It doesn't matter where you are or who you are. If you can do those things, you have a chance of having success. As far as the adjustment goes, you know, you can't just throw fastballs away here. You get behind in the count, you can't just throw fastballs away because guys are more willing to take their singles than they are in North America, where they're always trying to do damage and they're always trying to pull the ball and hit it out of the ballpark. So if you can execute a good two-seam down and away, you got a good chance of a rollover or pop-up or something like that. Whereas here, they're much more willing to go the other way with the ball and hit it hard and just take their single. So that's a little bit of an adjustment that way. They also do a great job fouling balls off late in counts. They do a tremendous job getting the bat on the ball just to get to the next pitch. And for a guy like me that doesn't have overpowering stuff, that can be a little bit frustrating because I don't necessarily have anything when I get to two strikes to really put a guy away because they're just so good at shortening up, finding a way to get the bat on the ball. You make a great pitch, they foul it off, now they get to the next pitch. So that's been a little bit of an adjustment, trying to get them to put the ball in play as early as possible, hopefully weak contact, and again, just finding different ways of executing different pitches and taking advantage of, you know, maybe some things that I do well.
Okay, the two-seam is often a pitch that gets a new role in Japan, because especially with a left-hand, again, for a right-handed pitcher against a left-handed hitter, because as you said, they can foul those things off, and because they're not looking to hit them hard, they, you know, they stay back a little bit on them. They're looking more breaking ball and adjusting to the fastball so that it's not as easy and out.
Right. No, the two-seam away here, it's a different pitch. It's not that you can't throw it,
right.
But you can't throw it all the time. You know, it's not something where 2-0, you feel good about it all the time. I think the one thing here, you use a lot more off speed, because, again, guys are willing to just take that single with the fastball away. So to counteract that, you can go off speed or you can try to bust them in, try to speed their bats up and then go off speed. So there are different things that you can do. And, again, everybody has a different approach too, but you see a lot of, especially left-handed hitters that are really, really good at staying back, fouling that ball off, trying to hit a ground ball to the left side. So that kind of eliminates that two-seam away because that's just playing into their strengths.
Right. I've heard a lot of people basically save that for Yanagita and, you know, Tsutsugo, the big right.
They're trying to pull it and do damage. Yeah.
Absolutely. And there aren't too many of those guys. So the other one I want to ask is, having had some success and maybe some disappointment with the injury last year, what was were there things that you thought, okay, this year I can do this better than I did last year?
I think there's always things you think you can do better. I mean, you're always trying to improve. You're never satisfied with how a season goes. You always want to be more consistent. You always want to be a little bit sharper, right? And that's the goal continuously going forward as a pitcher. You know, can I get to a place where I feel good about my delivery, where I'm executing everything, where I feel confident throwing any pitch in any count, and can I continue to repeat that throughout a season? And I mean, it comes and goes, and you know it's not going to be there every time. But at the same time, that's always the goal, is to get more consistent and feel more comfortable and repeat your delivery. And hopefully the off-speed pitches, the fastball command, it gets a little bit sharper each and every year as you progress.
You become a Japanese pitcher, you know, every pitch and every count.
Well, you want to, right? That's the goal. I mean, the more unpredictable you can be, the better, right? And that's something that they do a phenomenal job over here. There's no fastball counts. You can be 3-1, 2-1. You're still not necessarily getting a fastball, whereas, you know, over in America, you're 3-0, 3-1, chances are pretty good you're getting a heater, depending on the situation, obviously, but here that's not so much the case, and that's a testament to the way they can command their secondary pitches.
Does that affect your mindset a little bit, knowing, like, when you're in the bullpen with your teammates and watching them, or you watch with how they are, or more like you're watching how they're pitching in their games, and you think, you know, I can do that too? I mean, I'm with you.
Well, I mean, I guess for me, I try to stick to my strengths.
Right.
You know, I got here for a reason. I've had success for a reason, and that's kind of what I try to build off of. And then once they adjust to me, now I have to make my adjustments. So I'm not trying to pitch like Japanese guys. I'm not trying to pitch like American guys. I'm trying to pitch like I pitch. You know, I've been around the game enough to kind of know myself. I've gotten to know what I've had success with and what works for me, and that's kind of what I try to stick to for the most part.
Okay. Well, I'm going to wrap this up. I have about 15 or 20 more questions, but, you know, there's only so much time for the podcast, so we'll definitely get you another time this year, and thank you so much for waiting to be on the podcast.
Well, thanks for having me, Jim. It was a pleasure.
It was a pleasure. Thanks much.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Albers. It was a great pleasure, and as I said, I do have, I think, about 15 or 20 more questions, and So if you're fortunate and you can evade me for another season, maybe you'll escape that onerous duty.
I know. I laughed at the end. I'm thinking, what are you doing? You know, you told him we've been trying to find him, trying to get to him for a whole season almost, and then you tell him that we're looking for him. Now he can hide. Now again. He knows. He's out. Oh, there they are, man. I'm staying in the back. What are you doing?
Yeah, I know. I probably made our job more difficult, you know.
So,
I apologize for that.
That's all right. And I was curious. It sounded like he knew about us or that he wanted to be on the show. Or was that the case? Did he know about
you? No, not that I know of. We were just chatting briefly. And, I told him we had a podcast. And, you know, we talked to the foreign players and so on. And he just seemed excited. You know, he seemed to actually pleased to be on the show.
He certainly sounded that.
I'm implying other people aren't necessarily pleased to be on the show, but he was very enthusiastic about it. So, props to him.
Certainly.
So, any thoughts?
Any thoughts? I recall seeing his first outing. It was a preseason outing at Kyocera Dome. It was the first time I got to watch him pitch in a game, right? And he was starting. I think he was starting that game. I don't think he came. You know how sometimes in Japan they like to bring guys out of the pen, but I think he was starting that game. And one of the reasons I wanted to talk to him all last season was because of that preseason game, because he looked so uncomfortable. And I didn't know if it was Kyocera Dome, the mound, the lighting, the atmosphere. I had no idea what it was, and I've been wanting to ask him that. But the next time I saw him pitch, and he pitched there again, I did see him pitch there in the regular season, he looked a lot more comfortable. So I'm just wondering what was going on. But you're right, he is a lot of elbows and kneecaps, and he's left-handed. He's just, I'm sure the hitters have a difficult time picking up the ball. But the thought that stayed with me after hearing the interview is you hear him talking about being himself and also having to be different at the same time, because batters know what you do after you see. And you see the little jabs that he threw in there. You know, you play teams so many times, and then he said, and then sometimes back-to-back weeks. And I thought, my first thought was, yeah, well, imagine what it was before interleague play, buddy. Just sit back and take that that month off. But you see the guys so often, so you have to be yourself, but at the same time the batters get to know you and you have to be different. And I thought that was an interesting contradiction of how you have to be your best self in certain situations. You know, you have to do what you do, but you have to do it in a different way, or you have to do it better.
Exactly. I mean, I thought there's a couple of things, but I'll let you continue. But my thought on that was, yeah, I mean, he was like saying, you know, the two things that in that respect that stuck out for me was the fact that I don't have that pitch. He doesn't really have a plus pitch. So he reminds me, I was waiting for him to pull a Daryl Rasner on me and say, I just keep fooling him,
right?
You know, smoke and mirrors.
Right.
Because, you know, basically he works, you know, he hits his spots, and I'm sure he hits his spots, and he works, you know, he fine tunes his location as much, and he tries to vary his attack and his approach. And I guess one of the questions I wanted to ask is, you know, it used to be, and I'm sure, and this is an overgeneralization, that basically major league pitchers probably 20 years ago was more common than now. But with, you know, they would throw their fastball pretty much everywhere, but their curve, you know, if you were a right-hander, you threw your curveball more or less in the same spot.
Right.
And you threw it at the same target. You threw your slider at the same target. Well, you maybe had the two targets away and on the hands. And pretty much you kept things as simple as possible. But when you come to Japan, you know, they've got, of course, now, you know, back foot slider, front door slide, or, you know, they've got, they're getting more varied, and I think with the analytics and such. But you know, the thing about the Japanese pitchers is they practice throwing their breaking pitches to so many different locations that, and I think that's something that I kind of, I was kind of trying to open that can of worms, and he's going, nope, nope, I do what I do.
Right, right, right.
So, I mean, yeah, so that didn't go where I expected it to, but anyway, yeah, so I thought that was interesting. Yeah, he's being himself, but trying to be slightly vary that version of himself.
Correct, correct, correct. And, you know, I like what he said. You know, you can throw a pitch that you don't, it might be the wrong pitch, but if you execute it, you can still get the out. And that's, you know, I remember having a chat with someone on Twitter earlier this season, and they were complaining about the fact that the manager didn't walk or walk someone to get to another batter. And then I think that batter burned him, but I'm like, well, it doesn't matter who you pitch to. You have to execute pitches. So, you know, I can't fault the manager for deciding to pitch to this particular player. But that's the strategy that they employed. Now your job as the athlete or the person out there as the chess piece, I like to call it, is to execute and do to the best of your ability what it is you need to do to get the job done.
Sure.
So if you, I mean, if you make the right choice strategically but don't execute the pitch, you're still going to be in a bad situation. So I liked hearing him say that look, you know, I might make the wrong choice in terms of what pitch to throw, but if I execute the pitch, I can, you know, he's confident he could get the out. And you hear those things, you know, from a left-handed, not just because he's left-handed, but you hear those things from a pitcher and you're thinking, how many voices are in these guys' heads when they're out there on the mound, man? You got the catcher flashing signs. He might be getting something from the bench. The pitching coach, do this, do that. I got to work on my mechanics. I have to make sure this is right, that's right. Man, they must really be going through some stuff out there on the mound.
I know. I mean, generally, we attribute most of that, you know, the brain work to the, you know, the brain work to the catcher, especially in Japan.
Exactly.
The catcher is supposed to be in charge, and the pitcher is just, you know, this is the pitch I want to throw. Shut up and put down the sign I want. But I really liked his... You know, I often, first of all, I guess two thoughts when I ask about the catchers.
Mm-hmm.
One is, now, you never hear a pitcher, rarely, at least in Japan, you rarely hear a pitcher throw a catcher under the bus.
Right.
Now, that did happen. I guess the last time I remember that was in the 2008 Japan series, when a Giants pitcher basically said, you know, stop calling these pitches because you're just calling them because the bench is telling you to them and I don't want to throw them. And he did say that, you know, he was pretty much steaming, and he got hammered. He didn't want to throw the pitches and he got hammered.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that. That's pretty rare. Typically what you get, oh, he calls a great game.
Right.
But that's what they say. That's what they would say if it was like a pitch back, you know, if there was nobody back there, the ball was coming back automatically. You know, that's the default answer.
Right.
Oh, he calls a great game. But and sometimes you'll hear it in private. You know, I, you know, he's good or he's learning or, you know, we had some issues or whatever, but in public, you know, you rarely ever hear that. I'd kind of like, you know, I always hope sometimes they'll say, oh, that guy is just horrible.
So 2008 Japan series, was that Tetsuya Utsumi?
No.
Oh, you're not allowed to say
too many details.
Okay. All right.
Well, it was public, but if you don't remember, I'm not gonna, it was a Giants pitcher and he wasn't happy with the pitches being called by pitching coach. Takao
Obana. Yeah, I remember that. All right.
And he had a bit of a meltdown.
I'm thinking then it's Koji Uehara, but
nope.
All right.
No.
Well, let's move along then. Okay, move along with that.
Moving along.
So
I'm not going to give that one away. So anyway, to finish this, I love the bit anyway, aside from not throwing Kenya Wakatsky under the bus, as expected, you know, what I did like was his description of the dynamic with the catcher.
Hmm.
You know, and how they work together. Now, Wakatsky has taken over the job. He's sort of like the catcher that Oryx expected when Hikaru Ito won the best nine as catcher, and he won a Gold Glove.
And we talked
in 2012.
Yeah, we talked about it on the show. How I didn't know what kind of magic potion he had or whatever he was doing was working. And
yeah, it was like Cinderella.
When he caught, yeah, when he was catching, they were winning, and then when he wasn't, they didn't win as much. And but that went away, and he subsequently went away as well to Yokohama.
Indeed,
now.
And Wakatsky's got the job, and he's been very consistent. And I thought the description from Albert's side was interesting. And just for some the readers of my, or maybe non-readers of my website, jbullallen.com, this is a shameless plug, but the week before I talked to Albers, I interviewed Tomoya Mori of the Lions, and he essentially answered the same question, but from the catcher's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was quite interesting, particularly when he said, you know, sometimes I'll put out a sign and I'll look at and the pitcher's going to throw it, and I think, oh no. Just from looking at the way the pitcher's body language. So,
interesting.
So that was, it was fascinating. And, so that, and the two seam, four seam, change up slider, curveball. I'm going, oh man. And then, you know, nope, stop, five. That's it. Five. No more.
Right. Well, I love that you mentioned the dynamics that are going on there with the catcher and then the bench. And I like what Andrew said about, you know, you don't want to shake off the pitches that are coming from the bench. And I'm like, well, how often does that happen was my first thought. You know, how many times does the catcher have to, I mean, you know, in certain situations, I would have loved to have seen what was going on today because the Buffaloes had a walk fest. And I want to know who was calling those pitches in that situation. But yeah, that's interesting. I would love to know who's making the call and what they're basing it on and all those things. But yeah, it was a really fun chat. He's really energetic, and you can see why he's doing well here. Unfortunately, he is playing with Oryx and the Buffaloes, and they find a way to lose games, but. But he is doing well, and I always like to watch his starts, and I'm anxious to meet him.
His games were very consistent, and Oryx was very consistent behind him. They scored an average of I think 4.7 runs in the games he started, and they were shut out once, and they scored one run just once, and sorry, Randy, but that's what happens to other pitchers.
Yep, it happens.
So some guys get run support and some guys don't. And he was, you know, and I guess the interesting thing is he said getting a good start sort of helped him build confidence. And I wonder what would have happened if, you know, they'd gotten shut out those three times if the typical Oryx offense showed up. Because I noticed as we phase into talking about the Oryx Buffaloes, they're not scoring this year.
They're not doing a lot of things. So if you want to throw in some not scoring sometimes, that's true too. And
sometimes.
Well, a lot of times. But, I mean, it doesn't really matter. When they do score, they figure out a way to lose the games anyway. So, let's transition into talking about the Buffaloes. And what's new, they lost a game today they probably could have won. Kohei Suzuki, known as K Suzuki, because he gets the strikeouts, right? The K's. So he pitched well. And
well, that was the idea.
Yeah, that was
but
the idea.
They have two guys named Kohei. That's the problem.
Oh, I see. Anyway, so Suzuki today, he pitches 7 shutout innings. He gets 5 K's with no walks. And, you know, against that Sabre team, that team really puts a lot of pressure on pitchers and I think managers and fielders and everybody involved because you can cough up a lead to those guys really quickly because they score so much and they've got bangers throughout the lineup, the Lions do, but But they're also something that I've noticed is that they're really patient and they'll take the base hits. They don't try to hit home runs per se. And so that really torments guys on the mound. You know, they're like, well, at least I kept them in the park. And you're like, but you have to say that for about three guys. And all of a sudden you're giving up runs. So keeping them in the park, you know, maybe the solo home run isn't so bad if you don't have guys on base. But anyway, I totally get why they're so stressful to pitch against. Suzuki pitched fairly, you know, he pitched well. Suzuki threw 118 pitches, and so he left. And then the bullpen basically blew up. You had two pitchers, Taisuke Kondo and Satya Yamasaki, who were both shuttled out to the minor leagues after to the farm team after this game, this inning in which they combined to walk six guys, three with the bases loaded, to force in runs. It was just a mess.
Just a comment. I made this to my colleague on the desk, and we were talking. She was writing the baseball today, and I was checking it. And then a little while later, she was writing the Oryx game as our lead. I did not know why. I think because she had Kei Suzuki's first pro win in her sights, and then the bullpen blew it up, and then she said, she looked at grabbed a piece of copy off of our printer and said, oh, the two guys who blew up that inning have been sent to the farm team.
Yeah.
There's got to be, I feel bad being the reporters listen to the coach say they're going to the farm team because of what they did today. Like, man, it's just weird. You know, it's sort of creepy.
Well,
I mean, I can see reading it off the official announcement, and I can see the team telling the player. But I mean, it just, and I know it's not that. The manager will usually say, well, I think we're going to send him down because I want him to work on this thing or that thing. But, you know, Japan is funky, and sometimes a guy will make an error, catcher won't block a ball, and it's the manager just says, I've had it, get him out of the game in the middle of an inning.
So I also
have this vision where the manager says, those two guys, you won't be seeing those guys around for a while. You know, like it's in The Godfather or something,
right? Well, yeah, today it was the pen. The other day, it was them not being able to complete simple play. I mean, you know, it's, every day is different, but it seems like they're 8-14 with three ties. I mean, I don't really remember so many of the wins, and I don't like to call them the Buffaloes with an L-O-W-S at the end, but that's what they do, and today it was the bullpen. It just seems to always be something, and I don't believe in jinxes and all that foolishness, but they are consistently losing games that they have in their control and in their grasp. And we recently talked about the big thumper Yutaro Sugimoto on Twitter, and you know, the fact that he blasted those two home runs, and maybe he had come, you know, he the light had gone on for him, perhaps. He blasted those home runs at MetLife Dome, and then we talked about Yuma Tongu, who's hitting a little. But we also, when we did the previews show, when we talked about Joey Meneses and Claudio Rodriguez, our buddy in Toronto, said, oh, that guy has been hitting. He hit here, he hit there. He's been hitting in the preseason. And, of course, when the lights go on, he is a different guy. Now, he seems to be coming into form at times. He gets some really good swings. He's hit a couple opposite field home runs and looks good, but just hasn't been able to find that consistency yet. And then they have all these seemingly interchangeable, scrappy slap-and-run guys. You know, the Shuhei Fukuda, the Koji Oshiro guys, the Hayato Nishimuras, the Yuya Odas, and all these guys who they just throw in. And I've seen guys on Twitter and on the internet who are always complaining about lineups and so many changes in the lineups. And you look at Nishimura, you know, he's a first-year guy there. As the manager, he's trying to figure out who he can marry, you know, who he can keep and who he needs to throw aside. And he is just switching, changing, flipping, flopping. And so I can understand that the players are not, they're not feeling a lot of consistency out there in terms of, well, I know if I do these things and I do them the right way, I'm going to be in the lineup tomorrow or at the end of the game even, because they do so many, they make so many changes. So I know it's hard to find your footing and everything, but they just seem to not be able to finish off, you know, when it comes to the business end of the game. It's just like today. they play well for seven innings. They play great for seven innings, and then the last two, they can't throw strikes. They can't execute pitches, and they end up losing the game.
Yeah. Well, today was kind of a game that they can win. You know, if they score two runs, I mean, they don't score a lot. They entered Sunday's game last in NPB and runs scored. Last in a few things, last in on base percentage. But they, you know, they have, if they score two runs, that's not bad for the Buffaloes, because their defense in pitching is
normally good, as someone likes to say.
Yeah, you know, it's good enough for government work. You know, if they had a little more offense, they'd be a little better. But they've also had poor, you know. Players like to say, you know, when we pitch, we don't hit, and vice versa. And there's something to that. You know, if they're inconsistent, it's a problem. And they've been a little inconsistent, not horrendously so, but you know, it's a problem. And I don't know if that has to do with the manager or whatnot. But yeah. They got plenty of issues.
Well, and the thing is, you look at the pitching, and I thought they would miss, you know, former ace and one-time Salvador Award winner Chihiro Kaneko. I thought they would miss him on the mound.
Yuki Nishi?
You know, they would miss Nishi and both of those guys, but Yoshinobu Yamamoto has been fantastic. If he had the wins to go along with all the other things that he has done so far, I think he'd be up there for Pitcher of the Month for the Pacific League, but he doesn't have the wins, so he's not going to get it. You know, Taisuke Yamaoka is giving them big innings and you know, in terms of being out there, but he's not all that effective. But the guy I really like to watch pitch is Tsubasa Sakakibara. He's the righty who originally signed a developmental deal. And he's just, I mean, he's just a big effort guy, and he's out there and he's working hard and he's pumped up, and he's really fun to watch as a pitcher. But I mean, he walks guys, he gives up hits. And he's always having to pitch out of trouble, it seems. But, you know, he's doing okay. He's holding his spot in the rotation. I think he'll be, if he does what he's doing for a season, I think he can end up with a few wins. He can contribute, that's for sure. And then they have the other guys, the usual suspects, the Takahiro Matsubas, the Daiki Tomei. Anyway, their starting pitching seems fine. The bullpen has been giving up some runs this past week, but it just seems whatever they have to do. I mean, you know how the teams that are good, whatever they have to do to win, if they need a home run, they get that. If they just need to string a couple hits together, they get that. If they need to get a couple big outs here, and they seem to come up with that. The Buffaloes do the opposite. Whatever they need to do to lose is what they end up doing.
I hear you with that. It's kind of frustrating, and, you know, that's the word that goes with them a lot. But again... Yeah, they reminded me of something another Canadian, Scott Matheson, said about teams in NPB. He said there are teams in NPB that just basically go for types of players. Now, they look for guys that are small and scrappy and they say, you know, good baseball sense. And I think there's truth to that. There are good players who basically don't look like they don't physically look like good players, but they're just good at baseball. You know, they're good at applying the skills, and they're smart. And there are those guys, but when you got 100 guys who are all 5'5" and can't do anything except ground the ball to the third base side, there's a problem there. And that was his point. You know, there are teams, and he said it was more a Central League thing that they pick guys who basically with the 88 mile an hour fastballs and talk about how good their control is.
Right. Yeah, it's really frustrating. So, you know, on paper, I think they can compete, but in reality, they're not. And I think some of that frustration is what we saw with the manager saying, well, you know, I don't want to see these guys around right now.
Well, he said that.
I don't know.
How about today's game? He says, well, there's nothing I can say that's going to make it better.
yeah. So I think we're starting to see some frustration. Hopefully they can keep it together. And you know, nothing a little hot streak from the heart of the lineup. You know, if the heart of the lineup can get going, nothing that won't put an end to. I think they can, if they can put up some runs and keep doing what they're doing on the mound, I think they can at least win a few games and lessen the frustration factor.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jim Allen. If you enjoy the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast, you'll probably like jballallen.com too. jballallen.com is full of writing, research, and news related to the game I've been covering for more than 25 years. Now, any subscriber who writes and tells me he heard about the website on this podcast will get an additional month added to the regular 2-month subscription. Thanks for your support.
All right, let's make a 4-seam transition and talk about the rest of the Pacific League and get to the Central League. So looking around, I did notice the other night there was an interesting game in which Toshihiro Sugiura, the former Swallows pitcher, he's a righty for the Fighters. He got traded there in 2017. And
yep.
he's coming off of shoulder issues and whatever it is. And so they've got a workload management situation going on in Hokkaido. And so he was on the mound on Tuesday, had a perfect game going through six. And he took his perfect work to the showers because they took him out of the game. So the Fighters, who really have been doing things in a very major leaguey type way, they've been using openers. They've been employing these extreme shifts. Sometimes they've been platooning with, it seems like, the help of analytics and doing some other stuff. They went to protect the player instead of go for the perfecto. So I saw a lot of responses and reactions on the internet, as you're bound to see. But I was fine with it. I really don't care. These games are not for, I mean, they're for the fans, but as we've talked about before in the past, these managers are trying to get through an entire season, and they're managing the season, not just the game or the moment. And so I was fine with it, but what was your take on that whole thing, especially since Sugiura came from your Swallows?
Well, he came from my Swallows, but he was sort of an insignificant part on the Swallows, which was really a fun thing about that trade was that, and of course, the guy the Swallows got, I mean, there was the big guy, the big name was the Swallows' former setup guy, Akiyoshi, who's done quite well for them. And both of the guys the Swallows got have been fairly effective. It's one of those trades that looked like an absolutely nothing that anybody, you know, they were basically dumping four players that nobody wanted.
Right.
But they, it seems, this is like the trade that general managers will say when they're trying to trade with somebody else. This is the one that's going to help everybody.
Right.
And it's like it has. It's like change of scenery and guys are doing well, and you know it's the trade you want to see. I mean, for the fans, you want to see,
right?
Because you get guys who looked good and they're looking good again, or guys who've never done anything and they're looking like the guys they drafted them as.
Yeah, and I heard the announcers asking today. One of the announcers asking the analyst. He said, "Would you consider Ryo Akiyoshi the closer?" And the guy mulled around and mumbled and jumbled and said, I guess so. By situation, yeah. Yeah, he's a closer, yeah.
Well, he's a closer, certainly. And no, it's just good stuff because, you know, his career was just, he was just, you know, killing himself out there after being playing for the national team a few years ago. And Hirotoshi Takanashi has done well with the Swallows, and so it's really been great. So and the Fighters do have an analytic bent, probably more obviously more so than other teams. I haven't figured it out. It reminds me a little bit of watching the 1995 Oryx Buffalo. Oh, excuse me, Oryx Blue Wave when Akira Ogi was managing them, and they had Ichiro Suzuki, and they had a lot of platoon guys. they platooned at several positions and they jumbled the lineup, and it took a lot of work to sort of figure out what he was trying to do. But back then, that was sort of my job.
Right.
And I really enjoyed that. You know, there was a plan there, but it was very complex. And in this, and the fighters are like that. They're giving us all a puzzle. You know, if they're throwing us a challenge, see if you can figure out what we're doing. You know, I threw one out last week that Chihiro Kaneko, who in his last start threw 53-pitch, 5-inning outing.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think he was happy when he left. I really don't, from his body.
No, well, this is the guy who spent the winter at Driveline in Seattle and came back like, you know, the pitcher he was when, you know, the pitcher Oryx kind of expected as a minimum when they signed him to a big 4-year contract after he won every award in Japan in 2012. Or 2014.
Yeah.
So, he's looking good. And he, of course, what he said when he joined the fighters was, I'll be an opener. I'll be a closer. I'll be a middle guy. I'll be a mop-up guy. Put me on the mound when you want me. I'll be there to execute. Of course, again, like my catcher's great.
Right.
That's
yes.
Another one of those lines. Use me any way you like. And it's like, I didn't mean it exactly in those words.
No, yeah. I said that, but come on.
I did. Yeah, I know. Who means that stuff? Right. Come on. I know. We're all adults here, you know? Come on.
So there's some other examples of guys coming out of games that were perfect. Mm. And Kaneko was one of them. In 2014, he threw 9 perfect innings, but had to come out because his team hadn't scored either. And Shun Yamaguchi, 1 year with the Giants, I think he tossed 6 innings without a runner on. And of course, the most infamous / famous of the guys coming out with a perfect game was Daisuke Yamai of the Chunichi Dragons in the 2007 Japan series. And so there are other examples, I guess. It's just tough to take, I guess, for people, but I was fine with it, and I hope Sugiura does well with them, and I hope he comes back and pitches the same kind of puts up a similar kind of performance in his next outing and forces him to make these decisions. So maybe one day they'll let him pitch another extra inning or something.
Maybe.
All right.
Maybe not.
Let's shift over to the Central League now. Unfortunately, the Yokohama Bay Stars have lost 10 consecutive games through Sunday's action. Now, we're going to post this show on Monday, and there are games on Monday here. So, who knows, by the time you listen to this, it could be 11 or 12. Hopefully, it's not. Hopefully, you listen to it on Monday morning, and it's still 10, or hopefully they win. I don't know which one I'm hoping for more, but because we certainly work hard to put the show out there on Monday, so we'd love to have you listen to it on that day. Mm. But let's get to the things that really matter, and that's the Bay Stars. They're you know, Alex Ramirez changing his lineup, changing the players, shuffling guys, and just nothing looks right. Nothing is going right. And the Saturday's game, I thought Saturday's loss to the Giants was a perfect example of what goes wrong with a team that's in a slump. A ball that was hit right out of field. It was hit at Yamato Maeda at shortstop, and he couldn't corral it, and that leads to a run. And a pitcher, they had a runner on. The pitcher couldn't move the runner over with a bunt. And the next batter singles. And it definitely would have driven in the run. Then in another instance, they had a chance to throw out a runner at home. If all the outfielder does is throw a regular throw back to the catcher from shallow right field, I think it was. Then they get the runner at home. But all those mistakes involved runs, and they stung because they ended up losing the game. And all of a sudden, I look at this rotation, and I'm thinking, okay, I thought it was better than this. And we have Shota Imanaga, who is really pitching well. He's probably in line to be the Central League pitcher of the month for the first month, except, again, the wins are a little bit lacking. But then after that, no one is really pitching well enough to really cover the whole week. And you look back and, you know, these 10 games, it's more than a week. It's almost 2 weeks worth of games, and they haven't won.
Yeah, they got, I think the thing that gets me is that they basically, they got two, they've had three well-pitched games in the 10.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And in those three games, they scored one run each time. Then the rest of them have all been blowouts. Well, I shouldn't say that. I mean, Imanaga on Thursday didn't do well, but you know they scored three runs. They lost 5-3. They lost a one run game on Saturday.
Mm.
But yeah, 9-2. You know they had these. The first game was a blowout, and then they had a couple of close games, and then another blowout, and another lopsided game, and another lopsided game. So, I don't know. I didn't really think a lot of this team coming into the season, and then when I saw Imanaga pitching well and Hamaguchi pitching well again, and I thought, and Kami Chotani showing a little some stuff.
Cocktail.
I thought, pardon me?
I nicknamed him Cocktail, remember?
Cocktail. Yes, I forgot that. Yeah. How silly of me.
How could you? Okay, yeah.
I know. I apologize. That's a slight. Okay. And my apologies. So, Cocktail, indeed. So obviously yes, I'm thinking, well, I didn't have high hopes for them, but I did after the start, and now they're in a slump, but you know, one thing, and Alex Ramirez, the manager, looks a little bit like he'd be pulling his hair out if he didn't shave his head.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's, you know, it's funny because it reminds me a little bit about the first season when he said, I put pressure on myself to do weird things that probably weren't help. I wasn't putting players, almost like he said he punished players for his, out of his frustration, put them in positions where they weren't winning because he didn't, you know, it's like, I'm going to show this guy or, you know, he got into that a little bit of that mode and he said, it was really bad. And I don't think he's going there again because he seems to learn from his mistakes.
Great.
But they seem to be in a slump. I think he's just mixing things up to try and, you know, to go things. But they've done some interesting things with the team.
Yeah, including using Yuki Kuniyoshi as an opener one day, and that kind of blew up. And Spencer Patton was their eighth inning guy, and they said he is the eighth inning guy. And then they've had to move him out of that slot just to see if he can get some outs in earlier game situations. And
yeah, they seem to be clutching at straws, which is the bad thing to do. I mean, you know, what he told me after that first year was, or I guess he told me, I don't remember what point, I think it was after his first season when he said, I want to stick with guys and have confidence, but you know what? There's always a time when confidence is not warranted.
Right.
And you got to kind of know when that is. And I have a feeling that he's not quite certain when that is right now. He's probably wondering if his evaluations of the players or the effort he's getting from players, or if they're capable of doing what he thought they should be capable of.
Well, I know it's still fairly early. I mean, it's only a month, mm-hmm. and anybody can hit, you know, I always tease that anybody can hit 400 for a month. And of course, that's not really true. Not anybody can, but
most players can.
But
most players can.
It's possible. Yeah, it's possible. But you've got Toshiro Miyazaki, who really seems to be struggling, hitting in the 175 range. And that's a big problem for them as well, because...
Well, but that's a problem, it's not something he's got a track record, and, you know, okay, sometimes guys have bad seasons sometimes, but he's not the guy I'd be panicking about.
No, but I'm just thinking, I mean, it just seems when you have a guy in the lineup who, I mean, because most of the other guys at the top of the lineup are hitting fairly well in mm-hmm. terms of their batting averages. But once you get to Miyazaki, then it kind of falls off. And, of course, you do. He has the track record, and he has – didn't he win a batting title?
He did.
So you got a guy you really hope just comes around soon. And so while you're waiting and losing 10 games, I don't think it's a bad idea to sit a guy like that down, move him down further. But yeah, I know the message that it sends. It sends a message to that player that you feel.
Well, I think the message, and here's the thing with Alex that I really like, is I don't think he gives too many mixed messages.
Hmm.
If he sits you down, it's because I want you to, take a load off today.
Right.
I want you to think, with Alex, it's I've got your back 100%. If you're sitting, it's not because I'm punishing you. It's because I want you to clear your mind, take a break, have a day where you're not going to worry about if I strike out, what's going to happen tomorrow, because I got your back. And I think that's one of the things I absolutely love about him. There's lots of, he's got his personality and things, but he really is, if he's got a player and he thinks, if he doesn't have confidence in a player, the guy's going to go to the farm team and he's going to say, this is what I want you to work on.
Exactly, exactly. All right.
It's not going to be, I don't trust you, sit on the bench because he doesn't want a guy on the bench who he doesn't trust. So.
Yeah. Well, we all, I think, maybe excluding you, had some expectations for the Bay Stars to make the playoffs this year. So we'll see how that plays out as we move forward here. Now, let's talk about something happier, and that's the Carp had an 8-game winning streak. And that was good for them.
Yeah.
They came out of the blocks just kind of looking like they were in a stupor. And, if not for Hirotoshi Takanashi of Yakult, and we talked about him earlier being involved in that trade, and he went to the Swallows in the offseason. So Takanashi was able to slow down the Carp tonight, and 4-2, the Swallows end up winning, and they stopped the Carp's winning streak. But I found it odd that the Carp are doing so well with the pitching staff. Chris Johnson just hasn't been himself. He hasn't looked himself. And they got him a win one day. I think he went 5 innings and, held the opposition to just a few runs and ended up getting the win. And then he pitched the next time out and pitched really well and won the game. And then tonight he just was not very good in terms of keeping the Swallows off the board or keeping the ball out of the people.
Park, 4 solo home runs.
Yeah, but... But I think Hiroki Tokoda, the left-hander, who's a third-year player, mm-hmm. And he had some surgery after his first or in the middle of his first season. And mm-hmm. I don't know if it was an elbow. I think it was an elbow. And so he spent the whole last season off the first team. And I think he actually still qualifies as a rookie, right?
Because he is still a rookie.
Yeah, so he is a guy who's now looking like, he was 3-1 when he went down to injury as a first-year guy. So he won on Saturday, pitched really well. He goes 7 innings, doesn't allow a run. He gives up 5 hits with 8 strikeouts and 3 walks. And, he looked great. Wasn't a guy I really planned on seeing a lot of. And I remember him from that 2017 season only because he pitched really, really well at Nagoya Dome against the Dragons one night. But
somebody was tooting his horn tooting a horn for him in March that he was fit and throwing well. Mm. And, he did. And I thought, okay, that's interesting. And then he came out of the season like you rarely see when people say that about a player. Usually so often these reports are not actually reports, but just stories. I haven't written my story about Tokita yet. So, he's pitching really well. Yeah. And, move along. What's my next story next week?
Right, right.
So you don't really expect a lot, but I did see more than a few people talking about him. And, I had my eye out on him, and I thought, geez, this is a guy who, when he's been healthy, has been really good, and he looked good a couple of times. I looked at his stuff in spring training. So, yeah, I like that, and it's fun. It's weird when we're throwing out pseudoscience, and I in my comment about the Carp last week, it might even have been the week before when they before they had the win streak, is that they reminded me of the Haruhito Iguchi comment about the Lotte Marines, that they're too much on this, they have too much empathy for their own good, that they get in serious highs and lows. And I just had to think everybody was, you know, things just were not all working at once because the team was sort of like all commiserating.
Right.
but they seem to be playing today was not necessarily a good one. But they were just, you know, Takanashi was just really good. Takanashi was good. Takanashi was okay. But you know what he was really good at was when the Carp hit balls with lots of runners, when they really smoked balls with runners on base, they hit them right at Swallows players. So
all by design, baby.
He was great at that tonight.
All by design. You throw it in this zone, they're going to hit it here.
Yep.
But yeah, Daichi Osada looks good. He blanked the Dragons on Thursday for his first shutout in 5 years. Yusuke Nomura, he's putting together cleaner innings to me. I mean, I always talked about the fact that he's a high whip guy. And a lot of walks, a lot of little hits here and there, but he's putting together cleaner innings, so he looks good. So, you know, the Carp look sharp right now, and it was good for them to go on that run and wake up out of that stupor. So I like how the rotation's looking. I like how Suzuki Seiya came back. They beat up the Dragons pretty good, and Seiya Suzuki didn't even play. They held him out of the lineup. So, yeah, I think that things are looking up for that team as well, and the Dragons and Tigers are, you know, beating up on each other, which, you know, that figures that not one team is going to dominate the other in that matchup. So we'll see how that plays out and see how they go. But let's move along here and talk about the top players for April. March-April, I guess we have to add in March.
March-April, okay.
We did have some players in there. So I think it's actually going to be fairly easy in the Pacific League. Kohei Arihara has dominated. He dominated again today, and his ERA is microscopic. What is it, like almost about a half a run? He's 4-0 in four starts. He's second in strikeouts behind Kodai Senga of the SoftBank Hawks. He just looks like a completely different guy, even though he throws with the same motion and the same, that little hand thing. You remember Rick Sutcliffe, how he used to cup the ball in his hand and then throw it? Arihara does.
I remember Rick Sutcliffe, but I don't remember anything about him pitching other than he wore some kind of ugly blue uniform.
Oh, gosh. All right. Well, it wasn't blue. It was white and gray with some blue lettering. But anyway,
Okay.
So, I mean, he's got this little hand thing going with the way he releases the ball. And anyway, he looks really good. This is not sustainable. He can't keep this up. But remember, I talked about the fact that they didn't have an ace last year, and he has stepped up and filled that role so far this season. So I think he's the top guy in the Pacific League in terms of pitchers. What do you have?
I'd go with him. Does Rei Takahashi have another start coming?
Even if he does, I'm not impressed. I'm not going that route. No, I don't know.
But he could. Well, yeah. I mean, if he goes 5-0, you know, they'll say, well, yeah, strikeouts, schmikeouts, or whatever they'd say, because he's got more. I mean, the guy's. This is it's just weird, you know. He's got more walks than strikeouts.
Rei
Takahashi.
Yeah.
He hasn't allowed any hits, you know. So that's the thing, and it's just weird, you know. But it's early season weird, you know. You see these weird numbers. Arihara's still a little weird. I think he's got like four times as many strikeouts as walks now, which is again, you know, which is like sort of like Andrew Albers, except with velocity.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
With actual strikeout numbers.
Right.
So interesting stuff.
What about hitter for the Pacific League?
A hitter for the Pacific League.
We're always guessing here because we don't know what the criteria these people or this person uses to figure these things out, even if they spend that much time thinking about it. They just probably they look at who's the batting leader with the most home runs, and then they go with that person.
Well, okay, so first we'll check to see anybody's got a 400 average. That's usually gimme no. Tomio Mori is leading the league, and I wonder, Hotaka Yamakawa is leading. He's got 10 home runs, and he's got a slew of RBIs, and it's hard to say. Maybe Yamakawa or Brandon Laird. Those guys are good picks.
I'm going to say that they go with Brandon Laird if he has another good game.
Oh, because he's got the 350 batting average.
Because he's got the average and the home runs. And
yeah, I think that's probably wise. I think Brandon Laird, because Yamakawa will go, geez, he's driving all these runs. He's scoring all these runs. He's drawing all these walks. But 270, no, that's just not player of the month stuff.
Exactly. And Morty just doesn't have the home runs. That's about it. Mm-hmm. He only has three. Yep. So Laird has eight. So I think he's going to get it. All right.
I think you're right on.
What about in the Central League now? I think Imanaga of the Bay Stars, he only has the two wins. So I think even though he has pitched well, I think it's the aforementioned Tokoda who's going to get it as the pitcher.
The guy I like is Shin Yamaguchi.
Yeah. And they just about have the same stuff, except Tokoda threw his fifth game, and he's 4-1. Now, Yamaguchi, I don't think he's throwing again before. Well, is it possible? I guess, yeah, he could throw. He could throw on Tuesday. If he throws on Tuesday and he gets a win, he gets it. If not, I think they go with Tokoda because of the way he has dominated everything. Although the strikeouts are, Yamaguchi has.
Well, they're similar.
Yeah, they're similar. The numbers are similar. I don't know. But I think if Yamaguchi doesn't lose, then maybe the fact that he has no losses will get it for him. But if not.
Yeah, I think their ERAs are virtually the same. Yamaguchi's striking out more guys per inning, which I'm not certain they understand that concept. But I think, 4-0 trumps 4-1.
Yep. Yeah.
So unless Yamaguchi loses and loses bad, he's probably going to win it.
Okay. All right. What about the hitter? And then we'll move on here. this is another interesting one because you've got guys who have a high batting average, but no. Or I shouldn't say no, but not as much in the power numbers. And the guys with the power numbers don't have a high average. So I'm looking at Hayato Sakamoto of the Giants, and I'm thinking he might be the guy, even though he's not leading the league in batting average. But he at almost 350 with two more days to go in the month. And the fact that he has seven home runs and 14 runs batted, I think he might be the guy.
Yeah, that's the one. You know, if they actually looked, if they understood that walks matter.
Yes.
then it would be a no-brainer. But no-brainers mean nothing when you're dealing with people.
With no
with
brains.
People who really don't. Exactly, with no brains. So the no-brainer would be Tetsuto Yamada.
30 walks. As of through Sunday's game.
30 walks before April 29th.
Unbelievable. Yeah, and he's hitting 330 through Sunday night's game, so.
Yeah.
And he's got seven home runs as well.
And he's in Jingu, and he's basically, I think in his career, he's probably close to a 400 hitter at Jingu. So, yeah, I'll say Suzuki I like, Sakamoto I like.
Well,
I think
when in doubt, always go with the Giant.
I think that's what they do. No, I think it's they'll go 352 average. That's really what we want to see. So yeah, he's got a 350 average, and he's got some jacks, and he's a little light on the RBIs, but he plays of course. And if they cared that he played shortstop or not, that would help. But they don't, so it doesn't.
Okay. All right.
Okay. And, so, yeah.
All right. We'll see. I think it's Sakamoto. We shall see.
Probably.
All right. Making a two-seam transition, we want to talk about the home run totals. Now, we got... I just woke up one morning and saw it on my Twitter timeline that Joseph A., the Fighters fan, posted on Twitter about home run distances. And look, I said it earlier on, but of course, we didn't have any data really to compare, but now we have a month's worth of data. I don't know how much that means, but I've been saying some of these home runs look funky, and it's not just the fact that some of these stadiums, especially some of these Pacific League stadiums, have been redesigned or reconfigured to produce more home runs, but it just looks like the ball is, I've just seen some balls fly, and my goodness, I tell you, the one home run that I think I'm going to enjoy for the whole rest of the season is the walk-off home run that Kenji Akashi of the SoftBank Hawks hit the other night, and he does a backflip. And did you hear what he said about it? He said, you know, I was always a fan of Koji Akiyama, and I always wanted to do that if I ever hit a walk-off home run, and it took me 16 years.
I finally got it done.
Yeah, it was really funny. But a lot of home runs, and that I think that was a legitimate home run. It wasn't one of these stadium home runs. But what have you found so far in comparing these home run numbers over this first month through the 28th here to, or 27th, I imagine?
My data goes for, through Saturday's games, April 27th.
Okay,
so basically I compared
to last year's first month.
Yeah, I compared April 27th through April 27th, 2018 through April 27th of 2019. And across NPB, there are about 32% more home runs per plate appearance. Oh, and you laugh.
That's incredibly high, 32%. I know it's only a month, and it's not even hot yet.
So anyway, I looked and I thought, okay, let's see if it's the teams. It's not really the teams. It's more, you could look at it a lot of different ways. But, okay, one way of looking at it is, you know, which teams have improved a lot. Well, basically, four to five teams in each league are hitting a lot more home runs. Or there are a lot more home runs hit in their games, I should say.
Okay.
The big gainers are, for some reason, the Hanshin Tigers, and I have no idea why that would be. So I thought, okay, well, let's look at parks. And here's the interesting one. And obviously the park that the increase in parks. And in fact, yes, Koshien has seen a huge jump in home runs this year. Why it is, I don't know. Weather, perhaps. Wind blowing out, perhaps.
I saw one of those. Yeah, I did see a wind-blown home run. Yep.
Yeah. It used to be that the wind kept the home runs, especially from left-handers, in the park quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
The Marines are next in the big jump, as was sort of predictable. I don't know what the Tigers are up, but the Marines definitely reconfigured their stadium, so there would be more home runs. They're hitting home runs... the home runs at the Zozo Marine Field have increased by 2.7 times this year.
Wow.
Per plate appearance.
My goodness.
Koshien was almost three times, but that's partly because last year was a really, really weird year. And through April 27th, there were like six home runs hit there. And this year, it's kind of normal. So, you know, last year was abnormal, and that's really that.
Wow.
Marine Stadium is always low.
Yeah, 2.7. Wow, that's, I mean, yeah, I don't know if they, yeah, I don't they, know if they from, expected that.
Well,
that
they
home
went
run
from,
lagoon.
Yeah.
They better put a roof
Tigers,
or something on that thing.
The Tigers went from six home runs to 18 home runs during the same period. The Marines, the games at Zozo Marine Field went from 8 to 31. But it's always but they actually did make a change. And so, but what I'm seeing is every park except Sapporo Dome and for some reason Matsuda Stadium has not been a good home run park this year. And I would attribute that more to weather there than anything else.
Okay.
Of course, they did lose
pitching.
They lost a home run hitter. But, yeah, big deal. Yeah, it's not really a big deal.
Yeah, their pitchers have been good, though. Yeah.
So here's basically what I'm seeing is home runs are up across the board, and I'll borrow the one from 2013 when the home runs started flying again after 2 years of a dead ball, and people were saying, well, I think the batters are adjusting. And, and Matt Merton said one day, look, when you see home run numbers up here, up there, up over there, up with this guy, up with that guy, it ain't somebody making an adjustment. Well, he didn't use the word ain't because he went to Georgia Tech and he's a little more educated than that. He probably said it doesn't live at the address of adjustments. That's one of his new phrases. So,
educated, yeah.
Sorry, Matt. Yeah. Sorry, Matt.
No problem. But, yeah, I understand.
But anyway, yeah, it looks like it's something systematic. Last year we saw a slider increase, which NPB said, no, there were no changes to the, exactly like MLB said, there were no changes to the ball. And MLB said the ball is just as lively as it was before. And then what they didn't know was that the laces had been changed.
Mm.
So while the ball's the physical reaction to being smacked by a bat was the same, mm-hmm. It retained the same amount of energy from the collision,
mm-hmm.
and flew in a perfect world with no wind resistance, it would fly just as far. There is drag, and what they found is that stronger laces were keeping the balls from deforming in flight, making them less lopsided after they were hit, and thus able to travel farther. And I have to think that that's what happened last year. Now, to be fair, also last year I looked at whether there were more fly ball outs and, you know, balls in the air this year than there were last year. Last year there were a few more. This year there are fewer. And I think also, however, last year at the beginning of the season, the weather was fairly cold. It might have been warmer this year than it was last year. So that would also account for part of that. So, but I would think there's definitely something up with the ball.
Yeah.
And I haven't heard the union complaining about it yet, but I wouldn't be surprised.
It's still early.
Because they haven't had their working group session with owners until the end of maybe next week.
It's still early, though. Yeah, we'll see. All right. Well, that's something we will obviously keep an eye on throughout the season and keep comparing. So we'll wait for your next update. No questions this week. So anyone who has a question, send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter @JBWPodcast with the hashtag HighHeat, or leave us a note on the Facebook page. A note, a comment, anything is fine. Criticism is welcome. Everything.
Mm-hmm.
Look for us on iTunes. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballparks.